Live Show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, host for the show for the last 6 years, and also founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. The Yes to Life Show is also all about integrative cancer care, which means it includes a very wide range of approaches to well-being. That's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Today, our focus is going to be more towards the mental, spiritual, and emotional end, as my guest is Diana Lindsay, founder of Healing Circles Langley, herself a remarkable survivor of cancer and someone with enormous experience of supporting people with cancer. I'm speaking to Diana over the internet in Langley, which, if you're struggling to work out where that is, it's on an island just north of Seattle. Real pleasure to welcome you to the Yes to Life Show today.
Thank you so much.
So I was lucky enough to meet you at our Your Life and Cancer online event earlier this year, where we heard about your extraordinary story and about the work you do. But just for the sake of the listeners today, who weren't all at Your Life and Cancer, of course, can I ask you to start off by telling us about yourself, your incredible story, leading right up to you becoming one of the co-founders of Healing Circles Langley.
And Healing Circles Global.
And Healing Circles Global, thank you.
Yes, well, my cancer story begins actually in 1993, when I had a round with stage one colorectal cancer. And that was a fairly simple situation in that there was a cure, it was found early. There were complications. It took a year to get through it, but it was one of those cancers that they sort of knew what to do with, and the solution was just a matter of resilience to get through. Right. It didn't carry the heavy load of fear.
Right.
That happened with a later stage. So I had the privilege of getting stage four lung cancer diagnosis in 2006. My doctor was a kind man. He said, "I can't cure you. Your prognosis is under a year." My primary told me a year later that actually the prognosis was only 3 months because it had been in both lungs, the lymph nodes, the fluid around my heart and in my brain. So it had already metastasized quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, but here I am 16 years later.
Extraordinary, eh? What a great story. I mean, you know, lung cancer stage four is pretty much as bad as it gets, really, isn't it? And obviously yours has spread incredibly widely. So, yeah, how come?
How come I'm here? Well, we have to give honor to the mystery. You know, really, why am I here? It's a question I ask myself every day. Right. And my husband and I attempted to write about it. We wrote a book. My part is something more than hope, surviving despite the odds, thriving because of them. And my husband wrote the flip of it. The book literally flips over, and his is the caregiver story, something more than everything. What went right when life went wrong? And, but even that, you know, even after the effort of writing a book, it's still, you have to be humble in the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are a lot of lessons that I learned, and I think the lessons are maybe even more easily transmittable than the specific solutions, which I'm happy to go into. But when you're given a prognosis that's that difficult, I think the first struggle and the first treatment is to repair a sense of hope, to find a sense of hope. It's easy to just feel like you've been thrown off a cliff and you're on the bottom of the canyon and you might as well just stay down.
Right.
And in my case, it was my children who gave me Andrew Weil's book, Spontaneous Healing. And that was enough for me to go, okay, let's try something. And it was at the beginning of the integrative medicine movement. So There had, of course, had been pioneers in that from the 80s, many of which I read. And that was enough for me to, you know, just pick myself up and at least try. I asked my doctor, what are the odds of my making it to 5 years? Because I was in his office holding a baby granddaughter. Right. And I asked, you know, what are the odds of my making it till she enters kindergarten? And he said 1%. And so the question that I asked myself the next day after I got over that was, well, how do I get into the 1% club?
Right.
And I had some advantages. We didn't know at the time what a big advantage it was. It was before the dawn of targeted therapies, but there was one that had just come off trial. In the trial, it only had a 2-month gain for only 11%. So you'd think this is not really going to be that useful. But it turned out that I was a wonderful genetic match to it. Again, we couldn't even get the genetic testing at that period because they weren't widely available. And that drug was called Tarceva. And I only had one mutation because I was a non-smoker. So Tarceva was a good match. And so I think it really helped lower the cancer burden. But it was, I knew, because it wasn't offered as curative, I thought, well, then I've got to find 99 other solutions. Right. Now, you know, my doctor is willing to come with me. He'll stay with me as long as we can. And I still have the same doctor and he's a marvel. But I knew I needed to start looking elsewhere. And that's when I began to realize that life itself is a medicine cabinet. And I read an extraordinary book by Larry Dossey called The Extraordinary Healing Power of Ordinary Things. And that opened up my world because I then just said, well, you know, this food is healing. This walk is healing. These woods are healing. This love I have is healing. And I called it the joy protocol because I sensed early on, and I later corroborated it with research, that when I felt love, when I felt joy, when I could run that chemistry in my body, my immune system worked better. So I just set out every day to say, well, what brings me love? What brings me joy? And I asked, before that, I asked an even simpler question, which was, what makes me feel better today? Right now. And if it made me feel better, I'd do more of it. If it made me feel worse, I wouldn't. If it was in that middle zone, like, do I really have to get up and walk? You know, I'd give it a try.
Okay.
And for me, the reason I got to love and joy was an extraordinary experience. You know, when you're first diagnosed, it's so overwhelming that it's difficult to talk about because it can throw you right away back into your emotions. I happen to have a very good social support network, but the thought of reaching out to my friends and telling them overwhelmed me. So in a very practical way, I said, well, I'll invite them all at once and I'll tell them the story. It'll be under 2 hours. I can sit down. It won't be too exhausting, done.
Get it over with. Okay.
Just get it out of the way all at once. But I happened to type in the title line of the email, the Great South Would Be Lovin'. And so 125 people came down the hill to our house bearing platters of food and picnic tables and speakers and instruments and a washtub base. And we danced and sang and laughed for 6 hours.
Wow.
And I never, ever would have imagined I could have done that. But at the end of it, I felt better. In fact, I felt radiant. In fact, I felt fabulous. And how had that been? you know, at 5 o'clock, I felt awful, coughing, didn't think I could stand up. At the end, I feel better. There's been absolutely no medical intervention.
Right.
So that gave me, you know, a real lesson in the power of life, the power of love, the power of support. So that set me on my path, because it was the next day that the doctor said it couldn't cure me.
Right.
Nothing, you know, and I go, oh, but I've had 11, as if that were a reason.
right. I'd be interested how impressed he was with that. Amazing. What a great story. I mean, I'm interested that many people, in order to try and preserve their hope, actually won't want to know, like, statistics or prognosis and things like that. They'll just say, no, don't tell me, you know. And so they want to sort of go on with a sort of ignorance is bliss kind of approach. Whereas you went straight in there and asked the hard questions. Do you feel that the hope that you generated following that actually was somehow more solid as a result of you really knowing your situation?
First, I'd just like to say I have complete respect for everybody's approach to this. Mm-hmm. So this is my point of view. But I am a hardcore realist at the same time that I'm a hardcore optimist. And I felt like I needed to know, because without knowing, I couldn't uncover what needed to be healed. You know, I needed to know at each step of the time. I needed to know the magnitude of the effort and the fact that it was such a big effort. I ran a company and we transferred the company within 2 days. You know, I said, all hands in. This needs to be 100% effort.
So it gave you a sense of scale, a feeling of how big a situation you were facing, and therefore what kind of resources you're going to need to bring to it.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you have to go, well, what resources are there to bring to it? You know, here are the finest minds in the world, and I was at an excellent cancer center with a very brilliant doctor, and they're telling me there's nothing. Mm. So I knew I had to find something else. And I, for me, the first place I turned is actually, may not be the first place everybody turned, but in 2006, it was a good bet, which was towards a mind-body connection. Mm. In the 90s, when I had gotten cancer, there had been many dietary approaches, but by 2006, they had been debunked. So I didn't feel like that was my solution. It turned out it could have been, because more was known and more is much more known now.
Right.
But at that time, that wasn't where I went to. So I read about this mind-body connection. I'd read Bill Moyer's Healing in the Mind book, which actually featured Michael Lerner, who I later co-founded mm-hmm. Healing Circles Global with. So there's a wonderful twist there. But I had an experience of a dream that had diagnosed my first cancer. And while I hadn't been listening well enough to my dreams for the second cancer, I did have some faith in it. And so I went back to trying to make connection within myself. And I figured, well, it's got to be my language. It's trying to talk to my body. I didn't have training in meditation. But I heard a guided visualization by Martin Rossman. And I go, I think I can do this. And so it really was a making the process of listening to your intuition more rich, more detailed. I practiced. I got better at it. And so to this question of do I feel better or not? I was able to move from just kind of a hunch, an intuition to try something, to more clear communication. And ultimately, it was very visual. I would get visual imageries that would get more and more specific over time. And I was later able to correlate them and corroborate them with actual scientific processes of how does cancer retreat. And I was able to speak with some researchers that said, oh yeah, that's the apoptosis cycle. Oh yeah, that may be hyaluronan working to influence the macrophages. That may be this. And it certainly correlated with my scan results. So it gave me a place to say, here's all this research. And I researched nonstop. I read constantly. I read no fiction. I did nothing but pour through anything that was available. But then I would ask my body to help me decide which of these to try.
Interesting. Very interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, well, that's a kind of intuitive process that for a lot of people, I think, seems a long way off. But obviously, you're saying it's something you acquired reasonably quickly. Did it take you long to?
You know, I think the first thing is you have to get over the fact that you think it doesn't work.
Right, exactly. Right?
You know, our left brains are very good at saying, hey, I'm the king. I'm the only one here. And forget everything else. But our brains are huge, you know, and our brains are work collaboratively, right and left side, if you want to use that, or system one, system two, based on different ways that neuroscientists describe it. And I knew that I had basically outsourced the left brain to my very brilliant doctors. I hadn't completely outsourced it because I was doing all this research. But I wanted to see if I could get this right brain, this more holistic thinking to work for me. So yeah, I practiced.
Right, and it clearly did work for you. So fascinating. I also wanted to ask, that early intuition of yours, is that actually to look for things in your life that made you feel better, that made you feel love and everything, is that, has that become your lifetime mantra?
Actually, yes.
Yeah, I thought maybe it had. Yeah. Okay. Great. So you mentioned Michael Lerner. I wanted to sort of trace the lineage back here, because Michael, of course, the ripples from his work have gone far and wide over the years. He's been at it a very long time, a big pioneer. And I just wondered if you'd speak a little bit about your connection with Michael, what his work, and you know, how it's led to many of the things that are going on now.
Well, at first it was at a distance, like everyone. I read this work, I listened to Bill Moyer's Healing in the Mind, Michael and Rachel Remen's work in the Cancer Help Program had been widely publicized, so I knew of him. And I was particularly interested in his idea of intentional healing. And what he means by that is that we can set an intention to heal and then begin the process of removing the burdens to healing and engaging in that which brings healing. And For Michael, that's fourfold. That's a physical healing, an emotional healing, a mental healing, and a spiritual healing. It goes back to the roots of the word to heal, which is to make whole. And I felt, again, with the enormity of the scale of the problem, that I needed to face it with the enormity of that kind of solution. So, you know, for example, emotional healing, I very early on in the cancer go, I don't want to have any stress leaking healing power. So I need to forgive what needs to be forgiven. I need to ask for forgiveness for what needs to be asked for forgiveness. I need to write letters to those to whom I haven't expressed my gratitude. I went on a gratitude tour. I called up people that had meant a lot to me in my life, and I went to see them and I thanked them. You know, so it was a full effort on all of those fronts. And so I resonated with Michael's belief in the power of that. And Rachel Naomi Remen's work was also really important to me. And Rachel said, we heal best in community. And, you know, I put that into effect after the love-in. I realized, you know, there's a healing power in walking. The recommendation for lung cancer patients is 45 minutes a day. So I would walk, but I would walk with a friend, or I would walk with a baby in my arms. And it matters the environment you're in. So I would walk in the old growth forest. It's like I was continuing to add to the medicine. So I think those ideas were really important to me. The other key idea is this, the spiritual connection, the what gives your life meaning and purpose. And when I was able to get to no evidence of disease, I started to say, well, how do I give back? And people found me, found my husband and I, and we took phone calls. People came to our living room. We would just talk. But then I thought I had to save them. Right. And that's not possible in 1 hour. And it was a heavy burden, and I didn't really know how to work with it. So we backed off from that. We started speaking. We started working with researchers. I gave blood. I gave tissue. I gave my genome. And then we came back and we said, you know, when as we're speaking, what is most poignant for us is the number of people that come up and say, I don't have any social support. Can you get well if you only have a cat? I live alone. I've just moved. My family's in crisis. And it just broke our hearts. So my husband and I decided to dedicate the building where our business had been to a healing center. And we decided to do that on a Wednesday or a Thursday. And the very next morning, we gave a talk, and Michael Lerner was there. Huh. And someone introduced us, and we said, you know, we have this idea. And he said, you know, I've had an idea of how to take the Cancer Help Program into more of an AA model, mm-hmm. where you have support anywhere. I call it healing circles, and we said, we're in. It's very rare that you get an idea and then you have the world's expert the next morning start to help you.
That's pretty good. Amazing. So that's where healing circles came from in the first place. And so do you want to say a bit more about exactly what it does and where it does it now?
Yeah, so it started in our hometown of Langley, Washington, which is why it's called Healing Circles Langley. Mm-hmm. And we started by wanting to support cancer patients. And we knew that because of the breadth of the healing path that I'd been on, that we wanted to offer that breadth for other cancer patients to choose from. So we clearly wanted support circles We wanted them to be able to engage with any kind of integrative solution. The support circles at the time in hospitals, you could only talk about the chemo or, right, you know, the medical solution. So this was pretty unique to have the topic be as broad as you needed it to be. But we also had classes in Qigong and meditation, and we had classes in nutrition. We did over 100 topics. Death and dying, how do you prepare? How do you make it through pain? How do you get through suffering? In addition to, you know, how do you have fun and how do you build community? And because of Michael's breadth of contacts, after we opened, we got together the leaders of other cancer retreat centers. So Callanish Society with Janie Brown, you've interviewed her before.
I have, yes.
And Harmony Hill with Gretchen Schody, which also had come out of the Cancer Help Program. The Smith Center for Healing and the Arts in Washington, D.C. A group in Israel, Rav Adim, and of course, Commonweal. And we formed an affiliation organization, and we called it Healing Circles Global because Janie was in Canada and Rav Adim was in Israel. And it just did one conference a year, which was lovely. But when the pandemic hit, it was clear to me that this, again, it was somewhat like my own diagnosis. The size of the problem was huge and the scale needed to change. And so I called Oren Slosberg, the executive director of Commonweal, and said, Oren, we can go online. We can offer support circles around the world for over Zoom. And so that's what we've done. We now have 9 focus areas, so not just cancer. We offer online circles, 90-minute circles. And we offer training in how to do it so that more can come in, because we're a volunteer organization. We've currently trained people in 32 countries, and this is April 2022's, and we started in 20. So, you know, by the time you listen to this, it may be a different number. And 40,000 service hours, so it is clearly met a need.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so it's all over the place. So actually, you can join a circle from wherever you are.
Yes.
What size are the groups?
The cancer circles are kept deliberately small, so they're about 8, somewhere between 8 and 10.
Interesting. And are they all general in terms of what are they the content they address, if you like, are they some of them specific?
So that's a very good question. Right now, they are general because of the need. Our partner, Smith Center, has had tremendous success being very specific. Young people with breast cancer, gay men with prostate cancer. I think that that is an area that we'll be able to move into with more, you know, as we get more and more volunteers. We currently have a caregiver of those with cancer circle, for example. And of course, we have the issue of language. So we have a team in France that are just developing a cancer circle that speaks, you know, in French. We've got some people in Vietnam that are just starting to develop circles, and they will likely be in Vietnamese.
And what are the sort of key reported benefits to people of being members of these groups?
I think, first of all, there's a sense of calm that can come. You know, you typically start the circle and we do a check-in and we're agitated, we're stressed, we're afraid, we're sad, we're, you know, the emotions start, and by the end, the words that people say are, I'm calm. I'm peaceful. I feel heard. I feel loved. I'm connected. So I think there's an immediate change in the body's chemistry. I think it's really about adjusting to the ever-changing world of cancer. Studies have shown that the importance of social support in cancer patients is both direct and what they call buffering, which means mm-hmm. I'm able to adjust to what is in front of me. The topics are really interesting because they come out of the group and, right. and they're ever changing. And the treatment itself is actually very, very infrequently mentioned because that's something that you're working out with your doctor and it's very unique to your condition. And so one of our agreements, we call them, is no fixing, no saving, no giving advice. And that's simply because I, as the lung cancer patient, may not know what's available for a breast cancer patient.
Right.
You know, like there's 27 chemo possibilities and there's two for lung, you know. But there are many, many things that we have in common, which is the change in our relationships, for example, how we deal with the uncertainty, how we work with our anticipatory grief, how do we talk to our children, what do we do when our friends seem to abandon us. These are questions that every cancer patient, you know, works through it some way. And what works for me? So, you know, how does exercise work for me? What do you do for diet? Where do you find meaning at the end of your life? So they can be very, very profound, actually. And they can be very not profound, you know.
Joyful, yeah. Well, very interesting. I'm listening with, all ears, because we have a program called Wigwam, which is not a million miles from what you're doing. We're all in the UK here. Mm-hmm. And we come to many very similar conclusions about the kind of ground rules, what actually works. And we're trying to create a similarly open space for people to talk about whatever needs to be talked about. So there's plenty to compare notes on. Maybe we should have a direct comparison sometime. It'd be very nice to do.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I wanted to go on just to finish off to talk about what you could call the silver lining of this most unwelcome of diagnoses, its potential for transformative change. Now, I think you would describe yourself as having undergone some transformative change as a result of getting cancer. And I think this is something that a lot of people do find along the way, but plenty of people don't, of course, and they can be in some very dark places with cancer and not really see anything good about it at all. So I wonder if you speak a little bit about accessing that kind of transformative change, what helps people to access it, what's supportive to them finding a way forward like that. Anything you can say about that?
I can try. You know, that's a very profound question, and thank you for it. You know, I will often say cancer is one of the most marvelous things that can happen to you if you survive. And a lot less, not less marvelous. But perhaps I could tell you my husband's story, because he got brain cancer and did not survive. And so we've, you know, we've experienced when this doesn't work as well. And if work, if the definition of work is to survive, but there was, I'll take a step back to mine. There was a phrase, it's a Zen phrase, that what is, what isn't, and no amount of wishing or hoping can change that. So when we first heard that, we thought the is was you're going to die of cancer in 3 months. You know, it's pronounced with such authority, right? Even if it's 3 to 9, it's, you know, that's the is in front of you. But what we came to see was that actually that's an isn't. That's a prognosis. It's one of a thousand possibilities. It may be the nice paved road and the others are country lanes, but it is still an isn't. And so that opened our eyes to just looking at everything. Everything. Is this an is or is this an isn't? And we started to see that for every perceived is, you could look at a thousand other possibilities. And so it changed our marriage, first of all. You know, why do I think I'm right and you think you're right, and then, and we do this this conflict, instead of saying, actually, we know nothing. And we really could use two sets of eyes to face infinity with. And so we started, you know, going back to back so we could get a 360 degree view. And it took away some of that fear, and it moved us into wonder and curiosity. So when my husband was diagnosed with glioblastoma, stage 4 brain cancer, he started right at the beginning with the lessons that I had had, which is I'm going to approach this with wonder and curiosity. And he maintained that to the day he died. And so if we think that we're going to die anyway, this is true, this is an is, then how do we spend that last time? And his 14 months were full of social support, because by then our whole community knew how to rally around us. It was full of wonder and curiosity. It was full of a very rich inner journey. And he wrote of his journey. He made a difference. So I think he would have felt that there was tremendous beauty straight through to the end. Because he had had a transformative mindset himself even before he started the path. And for me as a caregiver, at first, it was, how will I save him? What will be the research? Where is the doctor? Yeah. I went through all of that. And then when it was clear that this was not going to be his path, I just switched to, well, how do we make this time as beautiful as it can possibly be? And that helped me get through it. So I said, well, we're going to make a pearl a day. A pearl comes out of the irritation, you know, it comes out of that, the thing that isn't working, but then it turns into a thing of beauty. And I would say to myself, well, if I can make a pearl a day, it doesn't really matter how long the necklace is. The very last time he left the house was to go out and buy me a pearl necklace.
Wow. What a wonderful story. But, you really, I think you're pointing to this thing about that you were able to shift from trying to save his life when that was a realistic possibility to accepting that it's no longer a realistic possibility. And therefore the is, as you described it, is that, okay, he is dying slowly now. And what are we going to do now? How are we going to respond to that in the best possible way? And there's somehow the added grief that we give ourselves by not accepting what is was taken out of the picture.
Yes. Right. because, you know, there is tremendous suffering that comes from not being able to be in alignment with the universe.
Yeah. That's where most of it comes from, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a great story. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. And also for all you've passed on, really, about the resources of the healing circles and what they can offer people. It's great to be able to hear that actually there's no reason for anybody anywhere to say, well, I haven't got any, but I just haven't got any resources in that way. I haven't got a social circle. There is a way to have one. And that's a great thing because, you know, one of the things that's so often said about cancer is how isolating it is. Even if people have got social circles, the cancer is still isolating if, you know, all their friends haven't been there, you know, and they don't understand it. So incredibly important for people to get hooked up with other people who actually understand and know where they are and know what they're experiencing and can actually share that with them.
Absolutely. Mm. I saw a study, I think it's done by Shao and et al., that showed the relative importance for breast, a certain cohort of breast cancer patients. And I believe the statistics are stronger for breast cancer than for some others. But it showed that diet and exercise was a 40% gain in longevity. Sleep was a 50% gain in longevity. And social support was 70%
wow,
increase.
Leader. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, recognition for how important, you know, that side of ourselves as social animals is, has leapt forward in recent years. I mean, just in terms of longevity of the population, it's one of the most important aspects, isn't it, for how long somebody lives, which, you know, just as a kind of obvious marker of how good it is for people, is right in your face, really, isn't it?
And certainly the pandemic put it right in the face for us all.
It did. It did. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's been a big learning, this pandemic, on many fronts, I think.
Yeah. There's another study that was a meta-study of social support, not just in cancer. And it had four conclusions. The first is that positive social support helps prevent disease, helps us get through disease when it happens, increases our longevity and also our happiness.
Right.
So huge gain. But the converse is also true. Negative social support can take years from our life, like in a bad marriage.
Right.
And the third is that no social support is as detrimental as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It is more dangerous than obesity and some of the other markers that we worry about. But the last is that it's unevenly distributed. Well, you know, we know that. But we can see increasingly in Western cultures that loneliness is more and more prevalent as we break up the family structure. So I think it's good for all of us to think about. And I think we also need to recognize that we're each different. We come into wholeness in different ways. Social support means different things for each of us. And so as we who work to offer and fill those holes, we need to have a breadth of offering. And
right.
And that's certainly what we're growing towards in Healing Circles Global. We've discovered in Healing Circles Langley that a cancer patient will go through many, many different phases as they survive. And there are many different areas of interest as they pursue their own healing. So we try to keep a very broad protocol in that category of social support.
Yeah, something for everyone. Excellent. Great. Well, you're obviously learning a lot about this territory and bringing more and more to it in terms of resources. That's brilliant. All right. Well, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Anna. It's been a fascinating talk. I loved hearing about what you've been doing.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Robin. It's a joy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There are clearly some very valuable resources on offer that Diana and her colleagues have created. To find out more, look at healingcirclesglobal.org. Talking of valuable resources, I'd like to mention three. Firstly, the back editions of the Yes to Life show. There are now more than 350 shows covering a massive range of guests and topics, so there's something there for everyone. And the good news is that there's a search tool to help you to find the content that interests you. Just go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and follow the links from the homepage to the show page. There you have the ability to search by guest, topic or keyword. Secondly, if you enjoy the show, and particularly if you're a healthcare professional, you may also be interested to check out the monthly Cancer Talk podcast series, which I co-host with senior NHS oncologist Dr. Penny Kekioglu. Again, follow the link to the podcast page that's on yestolife.org.uk, where you can sample any of the last year's episodes. Lastly, we have an online event coming up on June the 11th that will be a veritable mine of resources. It's called Natural Ways to Deal with Common Side Effects, and an incredible panel of 9 experts will be sharing their wealth of knowledge and experience. The early bird price is just £15, and tickets can be obtained by again following the links from the homepage of yestolife.org.uk. Thanks so much for listening today. I do hope you can join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.